the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL wire site that covers the Arizona Cardinals. And on the line with me is my co-host, Seth Cox, from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, the Arizona Cardinals site from SB Nation, and also one of the hosts of the original Draft Breakdown podcast. And we're here to talk about Arizona Cardinals football as they enter the bye week on episode 383. Yes, that's we're coming up on 400 shows since 2013, or whenever it was we started the show way back when it was Revenge of the Birds Radio. And even before Seth was on the show, because I started with a couple of guys for a bit, then Seth joined, and, you know, we've been doing this for a long, long time. But we don't have happy things to talk about in this episode because, you know, the Cardinals stink. And even when they don't stink, they still lose, right? So we're going to talk about that oh-my-gosh loss. The oh-my-gosh loss to the Los Angeles Chargers this past Sunday. And we're going to talk about three good things that we saw, three bad things. We'll talk about Sean Payton. It's Sean Payton and watch the plans and injuries, what the Cardinals are planning on doing on the bye week, and then we'll talk about Cliff Kingsbury's job security. So let's go ahead and get started, Seth. First and foremost, how believable for you was the ending to that football game?
I mean, I saw it coming after the second three and out, when that was the three and out where DeAndre made a spectacular one-handed four-yard catch, and then the next play he hit Trey McBride in the numbers, and McBride let the ball get knocked out, and you're like, oh, okay, so this is how this is gonna go, because this is the quintessential Arizona Cardinals this year. It's you get a spectacular semi-meaningless play, and let's not take away from that play by
Honestly, what was the greatest part about that is that it kept the ball from being picked off.
Right. You get that to perfect pass in a tight window, first down, may not ice the game completely, but like it now all of a sudden they're going to have to start using their timeouts. It's going to flip field position completely. And you're just like, oh, well, okay. And then they got the ball back, and again, it just went back to, let's just not do anything that loses the game for us. And that's a mentality that's unfortunately what happens when you're a bad team. You're afraid to make a play because you're afraid of the consequences if you fail. And that's just what a bad team does, unfortunately. And it's a mentality as much as it is a talent issue. And, you know, it's unfortunate, but you had to see it coming, right? Like, you had to see after the second three and out, when they moved the ball a little bit, and then you got the big sack from Isaiah Simmons. You were like, you know, they moved the ball quite easily before that sack. And then to just go up the middle, no gain, sacked, and then a screen to get to the 2-minute warning. Like, you couldn't even get to the 2-minute warning, man. Like, you got the ball with 2:19 left, and you couldn't even get to the 2-minute warning. Like, that was just, yeah, it was just sad.
And when they got the ball back, and I was there at the game in the press box, and Tyler Drake over at Arizona Sports can attest to this, is that are we gonna go overtime? I said, no, they're gonna go score the touchdown, and they're gonna go for two. That's Brandon Staley. And I'm not saying they're gonna get it or not, so they might still win, but totally what's gonna happen is they're gonna go down and score a touchdown, and they're going to go for the win. And that's literally what they did. And everything went wrong on that. So that series was just a cluster F. And they get the punt. It's not a great punt to begin with. It's an okay punt. But then they give up the 15-yard return, which puts them in plus territory. So they're already in Cardinals territory with less than 2 minutes left. And, yeah. So you kind of knew what was going to happen. And then, you know, those two-point plays are interesting because they have a lot of unless you're completely expecting it. And it was interesting after the game is because Buda Baker's he kind of getting frustrated because – Like he was on the defensive right side, to guard the slot, and so they threw it to the defensive left side, and then he said it's the same old story. He said it's like I go to one side, they throw it to the other side, and they just didn't have this. They didn't break on the ball quickly enough, and in a quick in route like that, you've got to jam them, and you've got to create.
You can't let them have a free release.
No,
there.
You can't.
That's again goes back to where Isaiah. I mean, he's turning into a nice player, but he's still not quite a good player.
And perhaps what they'd seen on tape before is that play instead. Like if he oversells to cut it off, that maybe the route goes behind him. And so there's that possibility, but yeah, that's the you have to gamble on one way or another, and at least in that case, Simmons, because of his length and recoverability, if he goes to break the route, to the inside, and to push him outside and to go, he at least has the length to be able to get to recover late and the athleticism to get back and get a hand up to perhaps cause some problems. And maybe it was also schematically, they just didn't have a fail safe for that read as well. So if he goes to create, goes and bumps the receiver immediately coming off the line of scrimmage, they might not have had it there that schematically they didn't have the help behind him if the route went a different direction. Who knows? But yeah, let's start about, but yeah, it was, and the way I described that game, afterwards, like, this is a typical Chargers game. We talked about on our show last week how the Chargers are a team that's impossible to figure out. They're a good team, question mark. They play teams really tough, and they play these wild end-of-game scenarios, and they don't always win, but this time they get the touchdown, they get the two-point conversion, and that was basically it, and you can tie it up to a handful of plays after that. But what we're going to do, to start, we're going to talk about three good things for the game, three bad things, and move on from there. So, Seth, what was your first good thing about that game on Sunday?
I thought, for 3.5 quarters, the running game looked really strong, even with four backup offensive linemen. Obviously, you know, now we know Josh Jones is the starting left tackle for the rest of the season, so it'll be, you know, a good thing to see him get to play. But I thought, you know, I think getting production from the running game in that scenario where you were kind of just able to impose your will up front for 3.5 quarters was a strong thing. I mean, you look at it, you know, they ran 34 times for 181 yards. It was just only getting in the end zone one time running the football that really hurt. And, you know, those are the things that you come back and you look at and you say, hey, how do you lose that game? And that's what it is. So, but like being able to have a dominant run game is always good to see.
Yeah. For me, that was something as well, was for me, number one is that the offense looked really good early in the game. Like they were getting chunk plays. Now we had been seeing with Colt in the game, it was dink dunk, get the ball out quick. But one, the run game, it was gat. There was so much open space in the run game to start the game, and they were getting chunk plays down the field as well in the passing game.
I mean, we talked about it, right? With Colt, they average about 4.6 yards per play.
There was at one point they were like 9.8 yards per per play at one point in the first half.
And they still average 5.7 in this game, which is really good. Like, anything over 5.5 is a good offensive game, because you're basically saying you get a first down every two plays. Like, and so that's the thing, is like you said, they were just humming along offensively for 2+ quarters, and that was just good to see. It was like they scored that touchdown pass in the fourth quarter, and then all of a sudden it was just like they turtled a bit.
Yeah, that. What was your number two good thing?
I think the number two thing on this would be, it's tough, obviously, how the game ended, but I thought they did a nice job keeping the Chargers offense in check for most of the day. You know, the Chargers are missing a lot on the offensive line, similar to the Cardinals, but you look at the difference, right? The Chargers yards per play was 4.9, and a lot of that came at the end of the game. They only had 311 total yards on 64 plays. The Cardinals ran 64 plays, had 55 more yards. They kept Justin Herbert under 5 yards per pass attempt, which is really good. For whatever reason, the Chargers chose not to run the ball, so they kept him under 100 yards rushing. They did give up 5 yards per carry, and some of that was a big, I think it was like, what, a
Herbert
20...
had two ridiculous scrambles.
Yeah, I think it was like 23. Yeah, a 23-yard scramble, which, I mean, it is still a run technically, so that really helped. But like, they kept Eckler to 4 yards per carry, and so I thought. And then they had 4 sacks in the game. I mean, and that's always a big thing. They got a little hosed in the turnover room, because they didn't cause a turnover technically, but they technically had 2 that got overturned. But, I thought defensively they did a nice job. But, I mean, it goes to show you how important turnovers are at the end of the day, right? Like, you play a really good game defensively, you basically outplay your opponent defensively, but those turnovers really do loom large at the end of the day.
It usually does. My number two good thing was actually, honestly, it was the play of the offensive line. This is an offensive line that is hodgepodge. Like, who would have thought at the beginning of the year that the starting offensive line would be Kelvin Beachum, and he's the only guy Max Garcia, who wasn't even on the team when the year started. So you got Max Garcia, Billy Price, also wasn't on the team, Rashad Coward, a guy no one had ever heard of that came in the last 2 preseason games, and Josh Jones.
And by the way, Rashad Coward was actually a defensive lineman, I think, as recently as last season, or it might have been 2 seasons ago. So like, he actually played defensive line in the NFL.
That's right. That's actually right. Yep, he played 4 games it appears that he's bounced between. So I'm looking at his
he's played both, but like, I think, yeah, last year in Pittsburgh he played 4 games on the defensive line.
Like, he started as a D tackle, as a defensive lineman in Chicago. They moved him to guard. He played guard for 2 years and then went back to defensive tackle. And low-key, okay, Rashad Coward is kind of interesting, because he didn't make the team initially. They had him on the practice squad because they liked him. Then he gets hurt. Then he gets cut. He's been gone long enough, and he comes back. But yeah, the offensive line play is interesting. And what we saw is that they traded for Cody Ford. Cody Ford's no longer in the starting lineup. It's Rashad Coward. For 2 games, they alternated series, and Coward has apparently won that job. Although there's an injury to watch with him. He finished the game, played every snap, but he went to halftime. He went to the locker room like 30 seconds before everyone else. I saw him after the game in the locker room. He had ice on either his right pec or shoulder. So that's something to, luckily for the bye, but that's an interesting thing. So my number two is the offensive line play because, well, one, you look at the run game. Now, we know that that the Chargers are terrible run defense, and but there was so much space in the running game for the first 2.5 quarters. And then you also go that the only sack that they gave up was a corner blitz. And so you can't really complain about the offensive line play when you rush for 181 yards and you only give up one sack. And that's not a one-on-one against one of the front seven. It was a corner blitz.
Yeah, and so I'm with you. I think the offensive line played a great game. I thought the defense played a good game, and that's why it's interesting that they lost this game because, the third thing I would say I took from this is that this offense is going to be fun to watch once they are up to speed and kind of in sync with everybody, but it does worry me a little bit if guys are going to check out now that they're 4-8.
Yeah, my number three is, and it wasn't anything about the play. They both made impactful stuff in the game, but was Hollywood and Hopkins on the field at the same time? Finally this season. It took to week 12, but they were finally on the field together. And in Brown played darn near every snap, and he was coming off of IR and was supposed to be limited. Hopkins was limited a little bit, so he played a little bit fewer snaps than he normally would. But you could still tell that if they could just get everybody healthy, this would be something fun to watch. But yeah, and so those are the good things. So come to next on the Rise Ups here at Podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's talk about what are the things we didn't like. Our three bad things. That's coming to next on Rise Ups here at. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's talk about the negatives, the things that went wrong, or rather the three bad things from the game. I'll start with mine. One is, here's the thing, and this gets overlooked. Matt Prater's missed field goal. It loomed large. No one remembers it now because it's a 49-yarder, and he's been very good this year.
He hadn't missed a kick.
He hadn't missed a kick. And
it was almost like Kevin Harlan was having too much fun.
Yes. Like we know that there's the announcers aren't affecting things, but you're just like, really? He hadn't missed a kick all year. And unfortunately, he didn't get a chance to kick because there's an interesting stat, I believe, that he has never missed a game-winning kick in like the final 2 minutes of a game or overtime. And I was hoping he would have that opportunity, when the Cardinals got the ball with they had the 12 seconds left or whatever, when they got the ball after the Chargers took the lead, if they could have gotten down in a couple of plays, so it's just like to the 45-yard line, the Los Angeles 45-yard line, and have him attempt a game-winning 63-yard kick would have been something special to see. That said, that's one of the bads, is those points ended up being important. He hits that field goal, it doesn't matter. They would have been, the Chargers would have been playing that combo of, do I kick the field goal early and then get the go for the onside kick and for the touchdown, or do I keep going for the touchdown and then do the onside kick? He makes that, the game's over, the Cardinals win.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is you look at this was just a game where you couldn't have those mistakes, and so like, you bring up the Prater situation. For me, the Cardinals turnovers, and it was disappointing because you look at the fact that James Conner had never fumbled in a Cardinals uniform, never, or at least lost a fumble. I don't know. He probably has fumbled, but he's never lost a fumble in a Cardinals uniform. And that's the game he does it when he's, what was he, 9 yards downfield.
Yeah, it was an 8 yard run, and then he coughed it up. That was the thing about that, is that both of the turnovers that happened, with the fumble at the beginning of the first corner by James Conner, and then the Kyler Murray interception on fourth down, they were coming at a time when the offense was just seemingly unstoppable. And so it not only were they turnovers, but they were turnovers when they weren't even playing badly. They were playing really well. And then, you know, take one of those away, and yeah, they probably win that game.
Yeah, and it's just unfortunate because, like we said, it was just not the time or the place to have those situations. What's your second one?
My second one is the bad things. And honestly, bad luck. And then that's the replay review, that they had two takeaways taken away. Now, when Trayvon was a fantastic play when Trayvon Mullen stripped the ball out of the receiver for the Chargers. I don't know how it was. I think that is absolutely the very first time I've ever seen on a review on a fumble where they gave possession to the other team. I've never seen that before. And so the bad thing was just unfortunately, I think the officials got the call wrong, because when Trayvon took the ball away, it wasn't like it was in the receiver's chest.
Right.
It wasn't controlled, but that's what New York said when Howard Balzer from over PHNX, he's the Pro Football Writers of America pool reporter, and he spoke with New York, and that was the explanation he was given, is that the Chargers receiver had clear possession of it under him, and that's when Mullen took the ball. But it appeared on replay that he started taking the ball away before that. So that was unfortunate. The Zaven Collins interception, you're like, yeah, Zaven got another pick. And then, no, it's not a pick. And that was so close. Like, the fact that you had to go in, like on the TV broadcast, you had to go, you take your super high-def camera and then you zoom it in five times, and then you can kind of see where the ball might have touched the ground. And I couldn't believe that was enough to overturn it. So it was unfortunate. It was quite unfortunate. I thought for the first overturned call, I believe, was a mistake. And the other one just, I didn't think it was enough to overturn. And so number two bad thing is that they were just unlucky when it came to those two. They had taken the ball away only to have their takeaways taken away.
Yeah, and that's just unfortunate. Like I said, it was just dumb luck. Even if you get one of those, it's probably game over. You know, and that's goes kind of to my second thing, is like, it's interesting that when this team plays well, it's very like basic, right? Like you have a game where you don't give up a lot of yards, you get some sacks. I mean, four sacks is a good number. I'm not trying to take anything away, but like, you don't have any like splash plays. Like, the closest thing you had to a splash play in this game was the Isaiah Simmons sack, when it was, I think it was 3rd and 7 at the 35, and it was a 13-yard loss and took him back to the 48 and basically guaranteed they couldn't kick a field goal.
Yeah.
But that was like your splash play, and you didn't have any real splash plays on offense either. I think, you know, you didn't have a big, I mean, and I prefer, you know, long touchdown drives like they had, but you know, you didn't have any big plays in the game. And that's what makes things tough, is that when you kind of plod along, if you will, you're having to continue to be perfect. And we saw on those last, you know, those last three offensive possessions and then the last defense possession, they just weren't perfect. And so that's the thing. It's like, yeah, it's fine to not be explosive on offense when you're moving the ball. But if you're if you start to stagnate like you did after that touchdown. I mean, here's the thing. The Cardinals went touchdown. They went three and out. They went three and out, three and out, three and out, and then had two plays to end the game. Like, literally, they ran 11 plays after they ran or had an 11-play 75-yard drive. So that is a – that's just – you have to be explosive at some point, either on offense or defense. And that's why I said I don't want to take anything away from what the defense did, because I thought this was probably – outside of the New Orleans big plays, that was the best game they've played this season. But that's the difference, right? The New Orleans game, they gave up 500 yards of offense or close to. But when you get two pick sixes, nobody really cares.
Yeah, that's right. The thing. For me, that was my number three bad thing, is the fact that they could not do anything. They were unable, for as much as they were able to move the ball for three quarters, how they could suddenly not move the ball. And it was very uncharacteristic of them, because the one thing that the Cardinals have done under Cliff Kingsbury especially is that they've been able to close out games well and run the ball well late in the game with leads. And that absolutely, they stonewalled. I don't know if it was so much what the Chargers had adjusted, but it felt like all the space went away. There were some very fun, interesting run concepts that they ran in the first half with a lot of basically where they created a lot of interference that allowed Connor to break free and get an open space. And then suddenly, I don't know if it was play calling, defensive adjustments, but just they couldn't run the ball anymore. And then other, you know, stupid mistakes, the sack by the goal line, the missed play by McBride. It's just a consistently that they can't put it all together. But you play well offensively for three quarters, and then you suddenly are the 2018 Cardinals again.
Yeah, and that's just, I mean, it's just unfortunate. And so, you know, and that would be my third thing. And you're just not getting big time performances from the big time players. And you know, again, we talked about like the Hopkins catch. It was a great 4-yard reception. Fantastic. But yes, I understand it saved an interception, but it didn't do anything. And that's where you need somebody on this team, whether it's Hopkins, you know, one of the highest paid receivers in the game, Kyler, one of the highest paid quarterbacks in the game. You know, Buddha, one of the highest paid safeties in the game. You know, any of these guys that are the high paid guys. James Conner's a well paid running back in the NFL. Like, somebody's got to make a play.
Right. And that's the thing. That's the whole thing this year. This Cardinals team was built to be a great offense, and they have not been a great offense this year.
And so it's like somebody's got to make a play. And I just don't understand. And maybe that's what the biggest issue is they just lack a true alpha. I mean, as great as DeAndre Hopkins is, he's never been really an alpha. You know, and it seems like when Kyler tries to take that on, it gets perceived negatively within the media, right? And so
those damn narratives again.
It's just an interesting concept.
Yeah, coming to next on the Rise of Sierra podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's move on. It's time for Sean Payton Watch. That seems to be in the news everywhere. It is the talk of Cardinals fans all over Arizona. That's coming to next on Rise of Sierra. We're back on the Rise Up Sierra podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. And at this point now, 4-8, it feels like every local media outlet fans are now on Peyton watch. Not to be confused with the 2012 Peyton Manning watch, which was fun, to say the least, back in the day. But Sean Payton is rumored, and this came from an ESPN, you know, kind of a league-wide dump of information. Dan Graziano and Jeremy Fowler talked about, you know, Sean Payton kind of sniffing around the league for potential jobs and suggesting that the Chargers might be his favorite, but that the Cardinals, if they end up with a vacancy, could be a team he is eyeing as well. And then on top of that, we get the news on, I think it came out on Monday, where we learn about a connection that that Payton already has with the Cardinals, and that is that when he was a ball boy growing up in St. Louis, and that he was a ball boy for the Cardinals back in the Jim Hanifan and then Gene Stallings days right before they moved to Arizona. So that is quite the thing. So it's just adding to the lore of this. Let's talk about Sean Payton then. First off, would he be a fit here? As, you know, firing Cliff Kingsbury aside, would he be a fit here? What type of general manager would he need? Could he work with Steve Keim the way things and the way things are constructed? And would this be a job he would take?
I think you have to work semi backwards. I think the first thing you asked, you know, or have to ask is, would he work with Steve Keim? And so that's the thing, is like, if you're not going to fire Keim, would Sean Payton take the job? So this is a really interesting concept, because I can look at the exact date, but it was about 4 weeks ago, wasn't it, that I text you guys, that I literally got a text out of the blue from somebody that works in the NFC North. I'll leave it at as vague as possible, that Sean Payton was interested in the Cardinals.
And it would make sense. I think he sees in Kyler Murray what most see, is a potential star that just hasn't put everything, like, we've seen talent wise and statistically it's not matching yet. There are metrics that show it, not this year necessarily, but statistically he hasn't had those gaudy numbers like a Mahomes or Herbert, when you know that could be unlocked.
And so the one aspect that made me nervous about this kind of report was that he wants kind of complete autonomy or full control. And so when you look at the question about would he work with Keim, I think the answer is no, but in the sense that he would kind of supersede Keim, maybe as like the president of the team.
Kind of. That's the thing. Is there? It would be. It wouldn't quite be Bruce Arians, because I think Arians had some roster say. It's very clear now since then that Keim has taken full time with full autonomy when it comes to the roster with coach input, because Cliff's idea, he just gives him a to-do list and said, this is my wish list, go get them, do something. And so he wants all the stars. But Payton would be interesting for sure. I mean,
fit-wise, you have to think that he would be a fit from, you know, we were just talking about it off the air. He averaged 10 wins a season as a head coach. So he brings he brings something that Cliff, you know, quite frankly, never had. And it wasn't an issue for you and I, but it can be an issue for a lot of veterans, and that's credibility, right? Like, he's got a winning credibility that he doesn't have really much to prove.
And he wanted a place that's really hard to win in New Orleans.
Right. And he wanted a place that was similar to Arizona, where he set the standard, and now they're trying to replicate it, you know, futilely. And so, you know, I think he would come here with the idea that he would kind of be the king of the castle, so to speak. I'm curious to you, is that, I mean, so like if you're talking in the sense of like John Gruden, Mike McCarthy, in the sense of, you know, 10 years, 100 million, and they're the guys that get a lot of, you know, a lot, if not all, say.
You know, of that trio, I'm most comfortable with Sean Payton.
Well, and they allegedly did offer that to Mike McCarthy, again, going back to 2019, right after they fired Steve Wilks. Because remember, McCarthy was let go right before
him. Cardinals got him fired, basically.
Yeah. And so, we say allegedly because, you know, obviously there's no way to know for sure. But so they allegedly offered that. And that's, I think that would be what he being Peyton would expect. And that would be the way he would come here. To me, that's always concerning in a sense, just because you're talking about, you know, does that always work? And I will say this, the Cowboys have been good under McCarthy. So I don't think you can complain too much about that. Can you?
No,
I mean, I know Cowboys fans do, but, I'm interested. I mean, obviously the end of the Gruden era was something, but they weren't awful in his tenure, were they? Before he,
he actually, it looked bad to start, but yeah.
So he went 4-12 and then he got him to 7-9 and then they moved to Oakland. He went 8-8 and then they were 3-2 after he was unceremoniously let go for something that's still something that makes me laugh to this day. So
for something that he wrote when he was working for ESPN.
For ESPN, that was being investigated, an investigation that had nothing to do with him. Like, that's the funniest part. Collateral damage, I believe that's what they call that. But yeah, I mean, it's an interesting concept. It always, I mean, I'm not going to lie, it's something that stresses me out as a fan, simply because you're talking about. You're talking about, I mean, I know people aren't a huge fan of Cliff, but the hiring of Cliff wasn't a Hail Mary. And the reason I say that is because that was literally the best they could do. And so, you know, I'm not trying to be negative. I'm not trying to say anything, but that was the best they can do. Basically saying, hey, Sean, save us from being the Cardinals. That's a Hail Mary when you're talking about, and I don't know if he'd want 10-100. I'm speculating that I would guess he would expect something in that realm. You also have to remember, too, they'd have to give up draft picks.
For sure, because through 2024, the Saints still own his rights because his contract was through 2024.
So, yeah. So, I mean, you're talking, you probably have to give up, I mean, a third?
I wouldn't have any idea. Like, for Bruce Arians to come out of retirement and go to the Bucks, it was a swap, a pick swap. So, the Cardinals got a sixth rounder for their seventh rounder. Is how that ended. It was a pick swap so that Bruce could sign with the Bucks to coach.
I'm looking right now because I'm curious what they were. Herm Edwards to Kansas City, but that was a long time ago.
That was forever ago.
Gruden to Tampa, but that was a long time ago. Parcells. Yeah, I mean, there hasn't been one real recently. Yeah, I mean, I don't know, maybe they would be comfortable doing like a fifth for a sixth type of swap or a fifth for a seventh. I honestly don't know. Like, I just don't know, because here's the thing is it's not like they're playing well. So it's a little, I mean, the Cardinals weren't playing well either, but so and they let it happen with Bruce. So I think sometimes you want, I mean, that's the thing is like, I would think that they would be able to get it done. It's just, I don't know. It's a tough one, but I mean, so let's say it's a 6-round pick and 10 years, $100 million. Like I said, that's a Hail Mary.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, if it doesn't work, you're basically set back for seven seasons.
Yeah. Oh, geez. Yeah. Coming up next on the Rise Up Series podcast, the best of our Cardinals talk on the web. Let's move on to the bye week. What are the plans for the Cardinals? Do we like what the Cardinals are planning? And what is the injury status of some players that could be coming back? That's coming next on Rise Up C-Red. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, best of Cardinals talk on the web. We are officially now in the bye week. The Cardinals are not practicing at all this week. The rationale is this is the latest bye that they've had at this point in the season. Rather than doing non-game planning or non-install practices where they do a little good-on-good first starters versus starters or just opening things up so that they can just, and then Bruce Arians did this. They would do run competitive practices rather than the game plan type things on the bye. So they're not practicing. They had a meeting on Tuesday, and they are off completely until Monday of next week. And there are some guys, there are some people who think Cliff Kingsbury is running a country club. They don't like to practice. Honestly, with the way they've been getting people hurt, and if it wasn't, they need the time off away from football at this point, probably more than they need more reps on the field to go for the stretch run.
Yeah, I mean, if they had been playing at a level where it was just fine tuning things, but a lot of this looks like it's press, like it's almost like pressure, and they just need to get away and like refocus on how they, you know, how they like to play football. Sometimes that's just as important. You know, I don't really have an issue with it. I think they got to just come out and get ready for the final five games and hopefully they play well and play up to their level of ability. And if they were to do that, I think it sets them up, you know, you can say, hey, an 8-9 or 9-8 season and not making the playoffs. Yeah. It's unfortunate. It wasn't the best, but we finished down the stretch like we wanted. And then you can look back and go, oh man, can you imagine if they would have won that Chargers game?
Oh, geez.
So,
yeah, and now the injury status is interesting because now the Cardinals now lose DJ Humphreys for the rest of the year. He has a back injury that's kept him out for the last three games, and now he is on injured reserve, and he was announced by Cliff Kingsbury he will not return this season. But Cliff said on Monday that there is some hope that they will get either or Rodney Hudson or Will Hernandez back on after the bye, back on the field from practice, and that's promising. Now they still have to miss one more game. Both of them do. Will Hernandez and Roddy Hudson, they went on IR after the Saints game, and so they've played three games. So wait, well, did they? How did they miss? I think they missed. So missed 10. Oh yeah, they missed weeks 10, 11, and 12. And on IR. So they still have to miss the Patriots game. But this will fly in the face of those who think that Rodney Hudson is just out there collecting a paycheck due to trying to play. He just it's a bad knee. And the fact that he's trying to come back is helpful to at least for the perception of him as a player.
Well, and like I said, it's one of those situations too, man, that you you look at it, and I'm not trying to take a shot at Rodney Hudson because it's admirable that he's even attempting to come back. A 34-ish year old, 330 pounder is trying to, you know, maintain his weight while rehabbing a knee so he can get back and play. Like, it's just, it's a lot to ask and expect, man.
Yeah.
And so I'm not surprised that I won't be surprised if it doesn't come to fruition, because it's just a lot to ask a guy.
Well, and the fact is that I believe at this point that one of the reasons why he hadn't committed to playing is because the knee was an issue. The knee was an issue all through training camp. They were trying to get him through.
Well, and whether it's his knee or just his health in general, and like guys know their bodies better than we do. And that's why, like, when a guy says he's hurt, I'm never going to question it. Like, it's just a flat out, like, I'm just like, no, not going to question it. Like, right. You know, a guy like Rodney Hudson knows his body. He knows what he's feeling, and there's nothing you can do about it.
So they could be getting those guys back. Rondell Moore hopefully will be back after the bye. Then you're looking at the injuries to watch. Antonio Hamilton finished the game but injured his ankle. Hopefully he'll be fine for that. And then
have we got any news on Murph?
No, nothing yet on him. They're hoping he can come back. And Vance said last week that, you know, backs are tricky things, which is really unfortunate. If this becomes something chronic, and hopefully it's more muscle than it is structural. If it's a muscle strain, that's a different story. They just hate getting, but if you're talking about discs and bulging discs and herniated discs that require potential back surgery, that's when you start to worry about it.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, it's been a tough year from an injury standpoint, especially along the offensive line. But then you look at a guy like Murph, who is literally having his best season as a pro, and you know, it's just it's disappointing as much as it is anything else.
Coming up next on the Rise of Sea Red Podcast, Best of Cardinals Talk on the Web. No, we won't be pre-previewing a game because it's the bye week. But let's talk about Cliff Kingsbury and his job security. That's coming up next on Rise of Sea Red. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red Podcast, Best of Cardinals Talk on the Web. Cliff Kingsbury was asked if he's worried about his job security. He said very firmly no. Now, whether that means he knows he's not getting fired, or two, he knows he's going to get paid all that money, whether or not he's fired, that he just got from his extension. And he will surely have a number of opportunities throughout the league, whether it's a coordinating position, play caller, or could get big bucks at the college levels if he wants to go back to that. But going back to the question, how hot do you think Kingsbury's seat is? And I think the sentiment we have to go with here, for me, is that most people don't like it. It's hard to fire a guy whose extension hasn't even kicked in. that's the best way I can say it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is it would be tough. And yeah, I mean, I just don't think he's going to get fired unless they finish 4-13. I just really don't.
Yeah, I think it's going to be, well, because if you fire Cliff and don't fire Keim, you look like they look dumb. If they don't fire him, there's going to be plenty of people upset. I've always been one to believe a coach should be given the opportunity to get out of any problems that they have, and so I wouldn't mind seeing that. That said, I mean, yeah. That's going to be interesting. That's the big question moving forward, and I guess it'll depend on whether he loses the team or not. I don't know. I don't think he has to struggle with anything, but the fact that, I mean, they just need to make sure that they finish the season stuff. That effort never goes down, because you can point to a lot of reasons why the offensive defense didn't work out yet. And so I'm unsure, because if they were going to fire him, this might have been as good as a week to do it, because they've got the bye week, and so you got a chance to work with the staff to kind of build things your way, and then you'll have the players on the field for an extra day on Monday.
Yeah, and I agree, and that's the thing is, like, you know, a lot of people want him fired, and understandably so, but I mean, you and I were talking about Sean Payton, and I'm not comparing them from their coaching ability, but, you know, you go back to Sean Payton's career, you know, he had 3 7-9 seasons in a row after he won a Super Bowl. And again, we don't, I mean, if Cliff finishes 7-10 or 8-9 this season, like, yeah, it's not ideal to finish 8-9 after you get an extension. But, you know, like I said, like with Drew Brees at quarterback, they went from 11-5, they went 7-9, 7-9, 7-9. And it was really easy. And, you know, we talked about John Harbaugh. You know, it's really easy to fire a coach when it goes poorly, because that's just what everybody does. The harder thing is to give him a chance to, like you said, correct it. And you go and look, right? And you look at just different things. And you know, again, go back to Harbaugh. And I know people don't want to compare a guy that won a Super Bowl, but after the Super Bowl year, he went 8-8. And then he went 10-6. Then he went 5-11. And then the next year he went 8-8. So again, you go back to it, like a franchise firing a guy, that's as good a time as any. And you might say, well, you know, John Harbaugh has a record, or well, yeah, but he was given time to develop that record. The first sign of struggle, it wasn't like, Harbaugh, you got to go. And so that's the thing. And you look at it, when you fire coaches immediately, you tend to be the team that fires coaches all the time, right? And we've seen it with the Cardinals. You know, I talked about it the other day. Like, I had no idea that San Francisco 49ers had more head coaches in the last, since they joined the NFC West with the Card, or the Cardinals joined the NFC West. I had no idea they had more head coaches than the Cardinals. That was like a baffling stat to me. But they've had some extenuating circumstances. You know, Marucci quit, or he went to the Lions, I believe. They had Dennis Erickson. They had Mike Nolan. They had Mike Singletary. Then they had Harbaugh, who again quit. Then they had Jim Tomsula. And then they had what's the coach at UCLA, Brian Kelly. Like, so that's the thing, is like, you go through all those coaches, and like, that's it makes it tough. And then they have Shanahan now. And, you know, I've talked about the Shanahan situation before. You know, he went 6-10 and 4-12 his first 2 years in San Francisco. Then he went 13-3, went to the, you know, Super Bowl. Then he went 6-10 again. And I'm not, I get that the Cardinals didn't go to the Super Bowl, but like, Cardinals fans would have wanted him fired after the 4-12 season, right? He's 10-22, and they would have wanted him fired. And it's like, but what are you accomplishing going to get another head coach? Like, at some point you have to let a guy develop his franchise and philosophy. Now, I will say this, if there's a culture issue where guys aren't buying in, completely different, completely different. But we haven't heard that yet. And so until that is something that comes out, then I agree. And here's the thing. There's been enough guys that have left that are big mouth guys, like Pat Peterson and Christian Kirk's not necessarily a big mouth, but guys that have left, that
they've never said anything about Cliff.
Right. It's always been about time.
Yeah.
And so that goes back to the next thing is like, well, I'm not firing a coach until the GM gets fired. If you want to fire Cliff, I'm fine with it. But Keim's got to go.
That's the thing.
If Keim doesn't go, I'm literally not advocating for firing anybody if Keim doesn't go, because I just don't see any.
Right.
I don't.
You're going to let him hire another coach.
Right. Right. And it's funny because you look at it, a team that's in a very similar situation. The Los Angeles Chargers are having the same conversation about Brandon Staley. And their GM, Tom Telesco, I believe his name is, just hired his fourth head coach. And
that's crazy.
And so that's the thing is like, or maybe Staley was his third. I might be, but that's the thing is like, you look at it and again, you're advocating to be the Chargers, right? That's what you're doing. So you look at it, Mike McCoy, who is the guy after him? Lynn, right? I can't remember his first name.
Lance Lynn.
9-7. Okay. First year, 12-4, and then lost in the playoffs, then 5-11, then 7-9. And so you fired him and you're like, going to get somebody else. We got this new quarterback. Got to make sure that we get this guy the right head coach. Bring in Brandon Staley, boy genius from the Los Angeles Rams. They're going to bring in, you know, the right fit at offensive coordinator and Joe Lombardi. It's going to be perfect fit. 9-8, and they're right in the same aspect again, 9-8. Like, you're getting the same results. You're just putting different names in there. Like, at some point, you either let somebody build something or you have to burn it all down and start from scratch. And like, this yo-yoing of coaches is not going to build anything. It's literally just going to be the same cycle. And I get it. The fourth year, you wanted more out of Kingsbury. I don't disagree. But Anthony Lynn, that was his name.
Oh,
Anthony
Lynn.
Lance Lynn's the pitcher for the Cardinals. I like that we had a sports cross reference.
I said the name. I'm like, that's not right.
But that's the thing. So, I agree. I mean, this is literally like going into that vicinity. Went 9-7, 12-4, then 5-11. And then you go 7-9 the next year and you're like, okay, we got to make a change. And then you make a change and nothing changes, right?
Right.
It's just a different guy making those decisions.
Yeah. And when you give a guy an extension, I mean, you're saying, I'm with you. So, yes, we want to win. And I think honestly, part of it, that the fact that he and Vance Joseph weekly meet with Michael Bidwill and do cut ups and kind of talk about things, I think that's going to be something positive for their job security, because the owner knows, like, there's communication there. And so I think that's probably what is good, because when you give them a 5-year extension, so the extension actually starts next year, you're telling them, I believe in you, I trust you. So if things haven't gone well, and there's a number of reasons why things haven't gone this well this year, okay, I trust you to get us out. Let them do it. The problem is if they don't, then you're stuck in. But it's literally the case of anything. So Cardinals fans are not going to be happy, but I think he's fairly, like, when he says he's not worried about his job security, that he actually means he's pretty sure that he's not going to get fired.
Well, like I said, unless guys like J.J. Watt, DeAndre Hopkins, Rodney Hudson, that have been through the ringer, right? That have I'm not gonna say Kyler, just because Kyler, the only coach he's known is Cliff. So, you know, I want the guys that have been around the block, that have experienced a lot. And especially a guy like Marquise Brown, right? That's come from a great organization that's considered one of the best organizations run wise in the NFL, you know, what are their thoughts? And like, if they're advocating like, hey, I think you guys need to move on. Okay. That tells me something. But like we said, we haven't heard that at all.
Right.
And so it just makes it tough for us who are not in this, involved in this, to make that decision.
And with that, we will wrap this edition of the Rise Up Syria podcast up, anticipating likely a show next week, since we'll have to talk about the Patriots. Might be a shorter show, but there'll surely be stuff to talk about at that point. So again, next week we'll be back on the air. That's Seth Cox. I'm Just Root. Thanks for listening, as always.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms, so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.